Greetings, my fellow Starfleet officers. I'm your Admiral on the bridge today. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd from This Week in Geek.net, and I'm joined by my visiting ambassador,
Steve Megatron Phillips.
I decided ambassador gives you diplomatic immunity to do whatever the hell you'd like.
Ah, so death to all.
Exactly. Kill everything and just blame it on the Romulans. So, we are back here in Future Bird. Hopefully you guys enjoyed our episode last week talking about great sci-fi TV. It was a lot of fun doing that episode. A lot of me saying the phrase, I remember blank, 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 blank. but it was great. Just revisiting a lot of those sci-fi memories there. So, once again, if you guys want to get in touch with us, feedback at thisweekingeek.net. We'd love to hear from people. So, this week's topic is we're going to be talking about the so-called Abramsverse. What's it done right? What's it done wrong? Our thoughts on the two movies. And where things could possibly go from here. Because I think there's a lot of wiggle room. So, I guess let's kind of start off our conversation. Do we like where the Abramsverse is now? Steve, go first.
I'm going to say no. I don't know. It's kind of complicated because I want to like it, but there's a lot to be desired. For one, I get that they wanted to start fresh and start over with the original crew, and they wanted to basically throw out, you know, the couple hundred years of canon in Star Trek mythos anyway, you know, the whole last 50 years of Trek. But it doesn't seem like they're straying too far from the original information.
Sort of like they have to have their own Wrath of Khan sort of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I think that they're trying too hard, honestly. I don't think that say what you will about the writing, I dislike it. But I felt that they were going in the right direction with the first film. You know, and I have this opinion of Orsi and Kurtzman anyway. That they do very well with the first film because they're playing off your nostalgia and their fandoms and able to basically give a voice to something that was dead or didn't have a franchise yet or something to that degree. And then I feel like they get lazier when the second film comes along because the first film, okay, I could get over the fact that the Enterprise was built on Earth. I could, despite the gravity-crushing, you know, ability of it. I can also get over, you know, some of the, you know, the future things like Spock getting thrown to the past and the transwarp transporter ability given to Scott. And then in some of these other things, because it kind of played well with the story. And then you get into the second film, and they basically recycle a lot of the first film and then throw everything out the window, you know, specifically the transwarp. If it's that easy for Khan to do it, why can't, you know, the Enterprise crew do it? Or, you know, instead of sending a ship out there and getting stranded, or, you know, where's the rest of the fleet? Where's, you know, I mean, there's all these lazy writing elements in the second film that I felt that it bothered me. Because they were recycling too much of the previous Wrath of Khan and Space Seed kind of mixed in there with, you know, a little bit of almost some of the other films. There's elements of all the films in there that I was piecing together at one point because I was irritated with it. But I felt like they were trying too hard to do the Wrath of Khan instead of just creating its own new thing. Because the galaxy is vast, and granted, the original series, they did not encounter as much as TNG or the other things, but it also helped, I don't know, shape their smaller world in the original series. They could have, there were plenty of opportunities to pull some obscure villain or somebody that had the ability to become a villain instead of just recycling Khan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the same mind where they have, that's my wife's phone, who she needs to get in here and take it away. Ow, please.
Nice.
I hate you. So, yeah, I mean, with the Abramsverse, the fact that they do have this new continuity to explore, I would love to see them explore something like the Tholians or something like that. I mean, they've only ever been seen as a spaceship, and there's like a Federation warning, like, don't fuck with these guys. Or, you know, maybe introduce new versions of classic races. Now, we saw the Blingons.
Ugh, that was horrible.
And they felt really forced in. Like, they could have used that opportunity to introduce a new kind of race. It would have been really cool to see what their version of the Andorians might look like. Or maybe a... Man, it would have been so cool if they went to the Gorn planet and dealt with them. Though, evidently, the video game for Star Trek is actually considered canon. And they fight, like, a Gorn queen or something. It's ridiculous.
So when Spock's head blows up ridiculously big, it's actually a part of canon. It does happen.
Yep, when glitches happen, it counts. Although, not everything is bad, though, because I felt... The thing I like about the Abramsverse is it does feel kind of fresh. I think this is the reboot we need, but not the one we deserve, to kind of paraphrase that classic line. And the reason is, a lot of sensibilities within the fandom now are different. We are not our parents. I think you and me, Steve, would kind of be the exception, because we're... How old are you?
I'm 28.
Okay, I'm 33. So we're relatively close to the same age, and we kind of get our parents' Trek, because when we were born, in our lifetimes, we had the classic movies. We also saw the birth of TNG and all the spin-off series. We also saw the death of our Trek relatively up until the 2009 reboot. So, but younger fans, say fans born after 1994, which is like 20 years ago.
That's crazy.
I know, like, hell, do you want to feel really old? As today, as of this episode recording, the N64 came out. Eagle now, just so you know.
That's three Nintendo versions ago.
Yeah, so, like, and the thing is, this new generation, these kids grew up seeing the ass end of all our favorite series when they were very young, and the only series that would have been super new to them would have been Enterprise. Not the best way to kick things off, and the last film they saw in theaters was Nemesis.
Well,
I profusely apologize for that.
Well, I mean, not that Star Trek was really that bad. Not in the films, despite, you know, say what you will, they weren't all that bad. And these aren't all that bad either. And I know it sounds like I'm hating on them, but if I want to watch a Star Wars movie, I'll watch Star Wars. And that's what the Abrams films feel like to me. There's no scientific thought. There's no, you know, they try and wiggle their way around it, but there's nothing that's scientific about it.
They feel like the prequel Star Wars to me.
It does, but I can stand to watch these more.
See, I like the prequels, but that's a discussion for a different day.
Yeah, maybe we should do that eventually. Compare the, you know, the classics with the modern. But the Abrams things, not only does the lens flare thing bother me, but it's like watching Star Wars to me. There's, you know, you have the hyperdrive instead of warp drive. You have the little sparklies that follow the Enterprise when it goes, instead of the light streaks. You know, it's every little detail like that. I mean, even in the second film where they're underwater with the Enterprise, which should not be able to physically happen. There's just so many differences in the new trilogy, or in the new, basically trilogy, that bother me. Even to the point of throwing in Spock in the second film, which just got awful.
Yeah, that was like, hey guys, remember when we fought Khan?
It was like showing that Spock couldn't think on his own. When in the first film they built him up to be this strong guy, and then as soon as Kirk broke him down at the advice of old Spock, he just became a little bitch for the remainder of the series. I mean, there was no, you know, I mean, he would combat him somewhat in words, but he really wasn't him.
He wasn't his equal.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. The relationship between Spock and Kirk in the new series, and once again, I don't mean to hate on us, because Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto are wonderfully cool actors. I love them both.
Well, they were all wonderfully casted, and they play their parts well for what they were written, but it's, again, I think it boils down to writing. I'm not saying that Abrams did a terrible job directing. The only thing I wish he did less of was the lens flare thing, because it just bothered me. And, you know, some of the ILM, you know, elements of how things were animated, I wish was done differently. But
it's weird. I like certain directors, but there comes a point when their signature is all over everything.
Well, and I think we're going to run into that later with Abrams again. Because he's still going to be tied to Trek, even though he's doing Star Wars, but he's not going to be directing.
Like, the thing that, like, there are some directors, this is very, very noticeable, and it's kind of their directorial style, or at least they have something visually. Like, for example, Tim Burton. I hate this guy. I really do. I don't much care for his movies. I don't much care for anything he really produces. But everything has this retarded, gothic uber feel to it, and you can tell it's a Tim Burton just by looking at it.
Well, it's got this grayscale element to it. There's nothing bright, everything's dark, everything's like old and dingy and burnt. And
I mean, you could argue Alice in Wonderland, but that movie sucks, and for those of you that like it, I have a helpline number that you can call.
Let's just call it what it is. His best movie was Batman.
Batman, Beetlejuice, Big Fish, Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Or sorry, Ed Wood.
I'll give you all those.
And the thing is, when J.J. Abrams, he has a very distinctive style, and it works for certain properties. It's kind of nice to have a hyper-kinetic Star Wars. It's nice to have Star Wars feel like an action movie. But the thing is, Star Trek should be a thinking man's action movie, in a way. And the first one kind of skirted around that.
It was introducing them, but it was also not, it wasn't making them seem completely dumb. It was trying to keep true to their character and still introduce everybody, but still have most of the elements of what would happen in Star Trek happen.
I mean, one of the things that I do like about J.J. Abrams' verse, I like the pace of the ship battles. They no feel like lumbering Spanish galleons firing at each other, where it's very pretty looking, but it's not exciting. With J.J. Abrams, I feel more like I'm in the cockpit of a fighter jet, or I'm really in a powerful battleship going against something else. I don't feel slow. And that's cool. Like I said, J.J. Abrams does action very well. I'm pretty sure he's the guy that did Alias, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So you know he's got the right background for it. The thing is, I think he goes for style over substance. And Star Trek is something built upon substance. Star Trek, for me, it's a great character study with some really cool science fiction elements thrown into it, despite being something serialized. Like, you get development in everything. And in these movies, what development do you really get beyond Kirk and Spock? And even then,
It's not, I don't feel like it's very much.
Yeah, and that's really unfortunate, because you get a little bit out of Kirk and Spock in Into Darkness, but in the first one, I think you just got a lot more, and that comes down to Ortsey and Kurtzman. Once again, when they're given the first part of a franchise, it's awesome.
Well, they knock it out of the park, and even checking some of the ratings, like the critical reception for the Abrams verse is overall higher than the other two, like than the TNG or TOS films. And the thing is the original films, The Wrath of Khan was rated number one with 91%, and out of TNG, First Contact was 92%, and you look at the rebooted Star Trek by Abrams, it's 95%.
Yeah, because those movies, they had action, but they also knew enough to balance characters with them as well.
And I agree, and I do think that they do their job better, but I also, you know, again, I love the first Star Trek. I have a few nitpicks, but I love that film. It still doesn't beat Undiscovered Country to me, or First Contact or Generations. No.
I say it's better than Generations.
I would. The only reason I throw Generations in there is because you get to see the Enterprise D actually crash. And then you actually get to see Kirk and Picard fight, and which is an epic battle in itself. That's the only saving grace for me, is the part where Soren is getting beaten by Picard and Kirk.
Although the way Captain Kirk dies is bloody sick.
That was pretty bitched out way.
that was
total bullshit. Now, there are rumors of Kirk being, or Shatner being approached for the third installment of the Abramsverse.
Now, as of this record, I heard that was confirmed.
I heard it was confirmed as well, that they had actually approached him at this point, and he said he would come back so long as it was a noteworthy part. I am. He says he's very excited about it, more or less. But, you know, again, anything can happen. And they're still trying to get Spock back, and I've had debate with a few people, and they're like, oh, he said he'll never do it again. I said, they always say they'll never do it again, and then they do.
Yeah, when they back up the truck full of money to the house. Yeah. And that's,
I mean, the exception to that rule would be like Christian Bale, where they said, we'll give you, you know, $50 million to play Batman. He's like, no. And they did that to Robert Downey Jr., and he's like, sure.
And that's the thing, though. Like, I think if they lose Zachary Quinto as Spock, that's a huge loss to the rebooted franchise.
Really, like, if they lose any of them.
Yeah, like, none of them are really replaced. I mean, you could maybe minimize their roles, because Chekhov's been given nothing to do. Sulu's been given nothing to do.
They had more in the first film than they did the second film.
Yeah, like, they're basically, they're there for exposition, and, oh yeah, I still work here.
And Scotty had more to do in the second film than the first film, really.
Mm-hmm.
Besides floating through an water tube.
But
yeah, I mean, I would be down for Shatner joining in Star Trek III again. I just would wonder to what degree, being that he was killed in Generations, and that, I mean, even though it's a completely different timeline, and I just don't see how that'd work with this, but I would watch it on purely the fact that Shatner's in it.
Maybe they grab him off that planet, or they run into the Nexus, or they pluck him out of time or something.
I don't know. Maybe the Nexus is like the infinite live zone of Mario.
Actually,
they just go into the warp tunnel and they just keep pulling him out.
The Nexus actually would be a really good way to explain it.
Because, I mean, even Guinan was still in the Nexus, even though she wasn't in the Nexus.
Yeah, so a version of Kirk could survive, or even so. It seemed like multiverse could, with the Nexus, you could go anywhere at any time. You're not just limited to this reality.
Throw this new crew into DS9. Oh, wait, they did that in the comics.
Yeah.
Because Q joined in.
Which is something we should kind of bring up. If there was a prequel,
they should just have Q do it.
Yeah, Q, or, like, I think of other things. I think it'd be great if they had a crossover somehow with the rebooted track. Bring in someone from TNG. I guarantee a Brent Spiner would do it.
Well, they should. What they should do is they should bring DS9. Besides,
I would agree with you, except Avery Brooks is nuts. Have you ever seen any of? Have you seen any of his interviews?
Just have Jamie Foxx replace him.
Oh. No, that's not a bad call. Or get Michael Dorn. He's always advocating to get back in.
Yeah, well, you know, and they can have Brent Spiner join in, and have Odo or Kira, and
yeah, like, there is opportunity here to bring over some fan favorite characters. But that's the thing, though. The Abramsverse has to be strong enough to stand on its own. And having old Spock, that's such a crutch.
Well, old Spock was a proper crutch of a passing of the torch in the first
one.
The second one, it was just a throwaway. They're like, they were saying, we don't know what to do here. Old Spock, come in real quick. We need help. And then we'll figure out what to do from here.
Like, you
and
realize...
then they recycled Wrath of Khan lines and just inverted them.
The thing is, with Spock in the darkness, he was basically a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire lifeline.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. And then the super blood was the 50-50.
Pretty much.
And the thing is, the Abrams...
Oh, the super blood. They did that in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. And better, arguably.
I would say so.
And that's the thing, though. Like, this series... This version of the verse, so to speak, does have a lot of potential. Like, the video games fleshed it out. Even Star Trek Online kind of mentions that the old universe still exists.
Well, like, and there's still plenty of opportunity. I mean, look how many times the alternate realities have been touched on in all of the Star Trek series.
Yeah.
Like, there could be a point where there's some cataclysmic, you know, rip in space where they can cross over to another realm of the Prime Universe or this alternate reality, which, you know, again, the Nexus would be a good bridge for that.
Or Q.
I would personally love to see Q return one last time.
And I think John Delancey would probably do it.
Well, I mean, the only thing that kind of makes me think that that may or may not happen is they did that in the comics. They had the Q Gambit, where he joins in, where Picard's an ambassador to Vulcan, and he says, "Oh, I like the new garb. It's very comfortable." And, you know, screws with him and says, "You know Spock's not dead, right?" And he's like, "Don't mess with the timeline." And Q's like, "Goodbye." And then goes into the, you know, the alternate timeline to screw with Kirk and his crew. What? But and sends them to DS9. But so I mean, I could see that happening too. I think that would be the most opportune moment to do that.
Yeah,
and maybe showing Kirk that, you know, maybe he ends up on the wrong path, and then Q's like, "Hey, this is old you.
Yeah,
learn from yourself, you dumbass."
Like, there's so many great opportunities, like. Although, and I don't want them to rely on just bringing over nostalgia, because honestly, the characters that could reasonably cross over and be exciting, you could bring over Data, because Brent Spiner still looks pretty spry.
Well, you could have him playing an alternate version of
Noonien Soong or something.
Soong.
Yeah. You could have, who's the actor who does Geordi LaForge?
LeVar Burton.
Yeah, LeVar Burton. Hell, Will Wheaton would, like, jump on many, many people's heads to get involved.
He was Romulan in the first one.
Oh, yeah!
But not saying that I want them to rely on nostalgia, and I know that it sounds like I'm saying, you know, move away from the old stuff, move away, you know. I do understand why they're trying to go towards that for the third film. It's because it's going to be released for the 50th anniversary of Trek.
And we know it's going to be Klingon-focused.
And it will, and they want to get Shatner and Nimoy in there, being that they're the last of the three
survivors
of the the last of the you know Kirk Spock McCoy dynamic, and you know I mean you've got Uhura, you've got Sulu, you've got Chekhov still alive, but Chekhov's in Star Trek
Renegades,
which even that could you know would be a nice pullover, but I understand why they want to get them in there for one last hurrah in case, you know, they do pass away.
Yeah, and it makes
sense.
It's
them rounding out their franchise of 50 years. So I totally get that. But I do think that they should also move in another direction where they can be finally free of the Prime Universe.
One thing that I think they could reasonably pull off is, like I said, maybe revisit an old species and give them kind of an update. I'd love to see a Gorn war. I'd love to see maybe things with the Andorians break down.
I think the Tholians would be a great film.
Yeah.
Just because it'd be something different.
Yeah.
It would be like the old age Borg in a sense. I mean, totally different concept, but I mean, it would be that, you know, they have their webs of ships. And
I mean, another thing that they could recently pull off is, I will go on record saying this, I think the Abrams verse could handle the Borg. But
they do have the updated technology, and they do have the transwarp technology now.
And
so,
they're more aggressive.
And they're, yeah, I mean, look at the Vengeance in the new Enterprise. I mean, look how strong they are. You know, they took down a Romulan warship from the future. I mean,
yeah, that's got to say something.
Granted, so, it's using future tech, but still.
And I'm thinking something like you look at them, and maybe if they wanted to do more of a callback, they could have this Borg evolved from Voyager, or V'ger, if they wanted to call back all the way to the original movie and somehow make it cool and relevant again.
Now, mind you, the Borg still technically got crossed over into Enterprise, and Enterprise is untouched.
Yeah, so they could do it.
So there could still be Borg frozen on Earth.
I'm trying to think of other things I'd like to see. Well, we saw the Breen get involved in DS9. Why not here?
Or why maybe, not the Dominion?
Yeah, or
Or the Changelings.
Yeah, like, there's so many possibilities for the Abramsverse, and that's the thing. I want them to tap that Bible of untouched possibility. You can use races that are already there, or you can create some new cosmic-level threat. Or make it a personal story. Star Trek's, as we saw with Wrath of Khan, can be personal and can really make for a great character piece. The thing is, this franchise needs to develop its characters beyond Kirk and Spock. You cared about the original Enterprise crew.
I think what bothers me more about this franchise is that there's no science to it. Not properly, anyway.
Yeah,
there's no them reporting on something, and I understand that that's like our parents, you know, oh, we got to sound intelligent kind of thing, but I don't like dumb Trek. If I want to watch dumb Trek, to me, that's Star Wars, and I'm not saying Star Wars is dumb, and I'm not trying to get a bunch of hate email, although
Star
if you want to send
more
it.
Fantasy.
Yeah, Star Wars is more fantasy, and that's what I feel like this Trek is trying to do.
It's trying to give you the action movie with phasers.
Yeah. And if I wanted to watch that, I would watch Star Wars because then I could see lightsabers.
Yeah. Like, I want to believe there's so much more in store for the Abramsverse. And honestly, I want to see Zachary Quinto continue as Spock. I think the problem is when you have Ortsy and Kurtzman in charge of the script, you're going to get another Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, or God forbid, Age of Extinction. Thanks, Blair.
But yeah, I mean, I personally would, and I don't see these actors hanging around as long as the originals did.
No, I believe out of the,
I think this third one they're gonna probably bail.
Yeah, I honestly believe out of the rebooted Trek movies, we'll get three for sure, fours maybe, and then that's it. Because honestly, our parents were more loyal to this franchise. That this generation is not.
Well, and I've seen, as late as today, rumors that they might bring a Star Trek series to Netflix, but honestly, I would rather see some of these productions like Star Trek Continues or Star Trek Renegades or something
Captain
like that.
Worf continue.
Yeah, I would like to see one of those continue, or hell, make all of them continue.
Yeah.
I would rather see all of those because, honestly, they're more well thought out. They're done by people that give a shit about the series. And they're actually gaining a following because they're not associated with anybody.
I think the problem is a Star Trek episode is more expensive to produce now because you look at the budgets back in the day, and the production department was always scrambling to find money. And you look at some of the series that Netflix produces now with Orange is the New Black, House of Cards, there was that Lilyhammer. And that's not even mentioning the Marvel series. And I can imagine Marvel's obviously pumping huge money into that. But after the box office performance of In the Darkness, I can imagine Paramount or CBS is wary as shit. Because think about this. When In the Darkness came into theaters, there was no merchandise for it. Well, Playmates hold the license for this stuff. And the first Star Trek movie had, you got a bridge replica, you got ship replicas, tons of figures.
But there was no marketing.
Yeah, and that's...
And the cost was so damn high for everything that... to be honest, I didn't like the phaser designs, and I didn't like the communicator design. I thought they were cheap.
I like the phaser design, but only because I have one of the scale replica phasers, and it does that little spin thing.
Yeah, see, man, I could see liking it then, but if you're getting one of those shit toy ones that were out, I had no incentive to pick those up. I would rather get replicas of the original series set than waste my money on those. I just thought they were garbage.
I will admit, the toy versions of the phaser was really cool, but the tricorder was garbage and the communicator was garbage. And that
they
really
hurt.
Yeah, they weren't in the design. And that's another thing, too. The Abramsverse has literally licensed to update everything to look awesome. Although everything in the Abramsverse looks like it came out of the Apple store. But it has the potential to actually look futuristic. Whereas the other Star Treks never really did. I mean, even Voyager and TNG were probably the best looking because DS9 had to stick with that Cardassian art design. Whereas Voyager was all Starfleet and so was TNG, all Starfleet.
But TNG actually got to update everything, whereas Voyager was stuck with whatever they had.
Yeah, but they were the most advanced, one of the most advanced ships in the fleet at that time.
Until the Enterprise-E.
Yeah, until... Actually, no, Voyager... No, yeah, you're right. I guess Enterprise-E would have been First Contact. Voyager started in, what, 95?
It started, yeah, because... no, it started in 94, and DS9 started in 93.
I'm trying to think, yeah, because I know Voyager did have quantum torpedoes.
They did, but that was about as far as it went. They were up to date at that time, but they still had that old bridge aesthetic and old ship aesthetic compared to... It was like a cross between the Galaxy and the Sovereign-class starships.
Yeah, like they're in that transitional period.
Yeah.
And I love the Intrepid class. That's actually my favorite class of ship.
Well, it's the only one that's able to land.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was more exploration, but then you saw what happened to the USS Equinox and how you don't want to get into a fight with these bastards because your ship will get the crap kicked out of it. But swinging back, that's the thing, though. Abrams, that universe, like I said, has so much potential. And I'm trying to think who in Hollywood I'd like to see take hold of it. Now, there's the obvious. I could say Joss Whedon, but I'm not going to.
They need somebody new.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, give someone who's done a good action movie and give them a chance. One of the guys I'd like to see, because this might match very well with Abrams' hyper-kinetic style of fighting, maybe talk to one of the guys who did, you know, The Raid or Attack the Block or something like that. Sure, it's going to feel like an action movie, but if you have a movie where it's the Klingon War or the encounters with the Gorn, you're going to want that hyperkinetic pace. And that could be fun. You could really make Star Trek into an action movie if you wanted to, and yet it'd still be awesome at the same time.
I just would want them to keep what the core of Trek was, which was not only the characters, the politics, the science of it, but they need to have all those in there as well as, you know, their exploration and action.
I'm trying to think of another director that might do well with it that's popular. Maybe I could see a Christopher Nolan Star Trek if you wanted more of the character-centric version, and yet it would still have action, but it would have much higher stakes.
But I think also he'd keep more practical with trying to keep with the science of it.
Yeah, and Nolan would be a great, great fit for that.
Because he was a stickler in the Batman series for the science and technology of it. Like, if it wasn't, you know, within the reach of that character or that era or whatever, it didn't happen.
Sorry, lost my train of thought there. My wife was motioning to me who she wouldn't want to see take this. The worst person you could bring in on this is
George
Michael
Lucas.
Bay. Now, that being said, if Michael Bay handled the ship sequences with the strict stipulation your camera has to be pulled out...
And I don't want to hear the...
Yeah, I don't want the Inception...
And slow motion.
Yeah. See, slow motion could work depending on what... If you showed it as, like, say, a critical hit to a ship, showing the bridge blowing up or something like that, I'd be okay with that, but not for simple just gun battles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want it to mean something. Thinking back to other... You know who would be really good? And I can't remember who did it. Have you ever seen the movie Children of Men?
Yeah.
Imagine that director doing a Star Trek where there's very minimal action. A real thinking man's Trek. That could be amazing. Or you know what?
Who might so you mean really... almost kind of like, for the most part, how, you know, the almost how the Voyage Home or the Undiscovered Country would be.
Exactly.
There was more thought and less fight.
Yeah, and that could really work depending, because Star Trek, when it's at its best, can be amazing. Like Measure of a Man and stuff like that. But for every Measure of a Man, we get a friggin' clip show, or a stupid Tasha Yar death, or we get the lame ending to DS, or not DS9, the lame ending to Voyager, but we also get really cool episodes like Best of Both Worlds and Reunification. The possibility is there to really make something. It would be really interesting to see what a war film might be like using Star Trek, except pull it back. Have the Enterprise not leading the fight, but being a support ship. And evacuating evacuees or trying to negotiate a peace treaty or something.
I'd like to see an actual fleet.
Yeah.
Not a decimated fleet and not a one-on-one ship thing. I'd like to see more than one ship actually show up.
You know what? I just had
kind of like Best of Both Worlds, you know, where you had a bunch of ships.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. If you brought the Borg into the Abramsverse, can you imagine the Battle of Wolf 359 on a movie budget?
It would decimate everybody because there wouldn't be enough ships?
There would be, first off, no dry seats in the house if you catch my drift, and there would be people would need new pants. Because it would look so cool.
So Kirk would become a Borg?
Actually, I think that would almost be really, really interesting.
Like a nanite injection where he's controlled by the Borg but doesn't actually have the facial implants. Oh, kind of like Star Trek The Return that Shatner wrote.
Yeah, except not stupid. Or maybe have a Borg assimilation thing hit the bridge and Kirk stayed behind. He gets assimilated and the movie is them trying to rescue him. It could be really cool. But once again, we don't want to rely on old tropes if we don't have to. Now, think about this. Can you imagine a Trek movie? I'm presuming you saw Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
I loved that film.
Make it a political thriller. They tried to do it with Nemesis, and it sucked.
They did it with Undiscovered Country.
Yeah, and that worked. But Nemesis didn't. So I'm thinking if you brought on some of the... Do I smell hot dogs?
Yeah.
Sorry. What the hell is that smell?
You're horrible.
Anyway, with the tech of today, the writers of today, and the directors, another thing they could do, give Jonathan Frakes a shot. He did First Contact.
That he also awesome. Did Insurrection.
Okay, not so awesome. If you get the right directors and the right script, could be really, really something special. And I'd like to see them expand the universe in the comic books, because there have been prequel series leading up to the Star Trek reboot, where it shows Data as the captain of the Enterprise, and Picard's an ambassador, and all this other stupid crap. And there's the prequel series that leads into Darkness as well, which I unfortunately didn't read. There is so much potential here to make this universe unique, to make it this generation's Trek, and I'm really afraid it's going to pass a lot of fans by. Because, for example, I want to use my wife as an example here. She hated TNG, hated the original series. She'd give me the finger right now. She loathed. Every time I would watch Voyager, she hates the theme song.
That's all right. My wife hates all Trek.
But here's the thing. When I took Blair to see the newer Trek stuff, didn't mind it. It's not something she would seek out, but if she went with me, it might be okay. And that's what I like. The fact that someone who hates Trek is willing to give it a chance because someone else is excited about it. And that's the thing, though. This generation, you can hype them up because you look at the Marvel movies. The ones that happened before, like the Spider-Man movies were the ones that people really latched onto, and they dropped the ball with Spider-Man 3. But yet you come up with Iron Man a couple years later, and people were, oh my god, so hyped for that. So
This... But I think that that holds strength based on it's pulled from the comics. Whereas if they made the comics strong, being that I know Kurtz, Orci and Kurtzman write part of the comics and are consultants on it, which kind of sucks. But I think that also, I mean, because my wife also hates Trek. She liked the first film better than the second one, Into Darkness. She couldn't sit still. More or less, it bothered her just because she was able to figure out what was going on ahead of time, and didn't sit through the entire movie because a lot of it was pretty obvious. And she's usually quicker at picking stuff up in a film than I am, and I'm usually pretty quick too. But she was tearing that film apart.
I think my wife was the same way during it too. Like I went to the bathroom during the movie and I came back, Blair, what happened? And she rattled it all down. I'm like, oh. Well, that sucks.
Yeah, and like, I felt like, you know, and it's not just me that thinks that they dropped the ball on the second one. The first one, she's not a Trekkie, and she could actually watch it. She would rather watch Star Wars than watch Trek, and she's not a fan of that either. But
blasphemy, I think, I'm just saying.
Yeah. She likes, it's the same reason she doesn't like Batman. I mean, she'll watch Batman, but she doesn't like Batman or Arrow, and she likes Flash and Superman because they have powers. She's definitely more of a Marvel fan, which puts us butting heads a lot in conversation, but, so anyways, I think that something that may help, and I sorted this out too, Frank's directed First Contact and Insurrection. He did not write any of them. The screenplays and stories, Insurrection was done by, Michael Piller as the screenplay, and the story was by Michael Piller and Rick Berman. Whereas, First Contact was Brandon Braga and Ron D. Moore, and, the same two and Rick Berman for, First Contact. So I think it would be kind of cool to see some of them come back to the fold.
Yeah.
You know, get Jonathan Frakes, somebody that knows how to do a Star Trek film, get, you know, Brandon Braga and Ron Moore, and, you know, even if Rick Berman was a, you know, a consulting producer or something.
Well, especially get Moore, considering he did Battlestar Galactica.
I think Braga did too, didn't he?
Yeah. So if you really want to pull a political Trek or make it some really awesome shit, make this stuff happen. But Orci and Kurtzman are hot right now because of the Transformers franchise.
Well, the funny thing is Brandon Braga did All Good Things and Relics,
which are two fantastic episodes during
exactly
the
my point. He also did These Are the Voyages, where they tied back into TNG, which I wouldn't say it's a perfect episode, but it was kind of a funny
of course.
Nod.
Yeah.
So it worked for how they had to abruptly end the show. So I mean. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of previous people that have been tied to the franchise that not necessarily are on screen that could be brought back to help.
I kind of wonder if there's some burned bridges somewhere, or whether Abrams and the studios are like, no, you're doing this fresh.
I think it's kind of a combination but I think the studios having a lot more control over it, which is probably why Abrams was kind of ready to jump ship. More or less, because I know that he wanted to do his own TV series and he wanted to tie the films to the TV shows. Which, look what Marvel did. I bet CBS and Paramount are biting themselves in the ass now. But,
yep.
You know, and so Abrams has now jumped ship over to Star Wars, which, you know, yeah, he's still a producer on the next film, but Orci is directing. He's one of the co-writers along with. J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, which I'm not familiar with those guys. It looks like Payne's had some experience writing TNG, DS9, and Voyager. So that at least has me a little bit more hyped up.
Yeah.
Knowing that somebody... I mean, it says he wrote TNG Frame of Mind, which was like a Riker episode. Where he's an alien, or he thinks he's losing his mind, he keeps shifting between an alien hospital and the Enterprise. And then there's a couple DS9 and Voyager. And then Patrick McKay is it was he grew up on like TOS and TNG, so that I'm kind of on that one. But who knows? I'm optimistic for the future of the Abrams verse. I hope that the direction changes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still gonna be there first day. And
oh yeah, I'm still gonna see it in IMAX.
Yeah, like it's gonna be that's our thing. So I guess let's kind of bring this discussion to a close. We're both optimistic about what could happen, but we're more afraid about what's going to happen. It sits on a very dangerous precipice between awesome and being complete shit. So we'll have to wait and see. I mean, ultimately, we get to see the Enterprise on screen. That's cool. But
and it's refurbished by the end of Into Darkness.
Yeah, so there's new possibilities there. So, guys, Hollywood, if you are listening, take some of our suggestions into at least consideration.
Hire me and Dodd.
Yes, consultants. They make good money. And we'll work cheap.
I'd work for a cameo.
I would work for props. God, what do you want? Phaser rifle, phaser rifle, cool. Phaser rifle. And I'll take that computer panel, too. So, like I said, if you're listening, guys, you know how to find me. So, next time on the show, we're not quite sure what we're going to be talking about. I mean, we've talked about space travel, we've talked about our favorite sci-fi TV shows, but we haven't talked about the aliens of Star Trek or aliens just being out there in the weird wide world. We've also never talked about alternate realities. There is tons of Star Trek humor. And the long-awaited DS9 episode, which we keep avoiding because that series is something you can't just skip episodes. You really can't. It's really, really serialized. So missing something can really screw you over. Whereas Voyager, not so much. Have we done a Voyager-focused episode?
I can't remember. I think it would almost be fun to talk about certain elements where they've time-jumped, like where Sulu appeared in Voyager or, the DS9 in Trials and Tribulations.
The whole crossover phenomena.
Yeah.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. So we'll look at those possibilities, but we do want to hear from you guys, so please get involved with the show. By emailing feedback@thisweekingeek.net or calling our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Definitely want to thank our sponsors of Starfleet, which you can find at sfi.org, or Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club. Good people. I'm part of the USS Hadfield myself. I'm only a crewman because I lost my Starfleet information package, and I need to apply to the Academy again. And I'm dead serious. You can gain ranks and do really cool stuff with your ship. So one final thing that I want to put out there is, if you guys remember a little while ago, I talked about doing that charity for Toronto Sick Kids Hospital. I've reached my goal of $500 raised, but the event is still just under a month away. I'd like to raise another $500 to get $1,000 for Toronto Sick Kids Hospital. So if you want more information, there is the sidebar, or you can go to birdmangivesback.com. 100% of all those donations go directly to the kids. I don't see a red cent, and that's the way it should be. So, Steve, what do you want to promote?
Well, I will be doing another Altered Geek. Last week we talked about conventions. Got quite a bit of feedback on that, especially about the cosplay side of it. And then I've been doing this new TV show called Remote Control. It's a podcast, but it's based on TV shows. It's more or less the coverage of newer shows like Gotham, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and stuff like that. Big Bang Theory, a lot of the premieres we're going to be covering certain episodes throughout the series. And then I'm on another podcast on another network that's actually local to me that we're doing basically spoilerific episodes in 20 minutes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I like it. You should post some of those on Twig. I think our listeners would definitely appreciate it.
Alrighty.
Alright, guys, so for Future Imperfect, we have been
Steve Megatron Phillips.
And I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live long and prosper.